Accession number 30416, Mr. John Taylor, Rail 10. Now, we were just talking about some of the raids towards the end of your tours. Are there any you particularly remember?
Well, there was the trip on the 26th of July. I think it was to Givor, but we were flying. A pilot called to me. He said, "John, come up here and have a look." Usually he didn't like me coming out of my little cabin. Thought he might lose me and he couldn't find his way home. So I stood and stood behind, between the pilot and the engineer. And it was moonlight. And underneath us were mountain after mountain, absolutely bathed in white moonlight. It was a glorious sight. And they say, see the Alps by moonlight. Well, we did that night.
And then the next night, you seem to have gone to Stuttgart.
Yes.
And then a couple of daytime raids on V weapon sites.
Yes.
But the next big thing is on the 2nd of August. It's actually when you return to your airfield, you get attacked as you're approaching. Can you tell that story? It sounds quite dramatic in your brief memoirs.
Well, you know, funnily enough, I can't remember much about that. I don't know whether I was so terrified at the time that I blotted it out. But there was quite a lot of intruding going on at that time, where these night fighters would pick up the returning bombers' stream and follow them back to their bases. And then when everybody was all relaxed and packing up, they would attack just as they were off their guard. And that was when a bomber got into a night fighter got into our returning stream. We weren't hit, and I can't remember anybody being shot down, whether the ACAC drove them away. But
it was the bomb aimer that gave the warning, wasn't it? That seems to be,
oh, that wasn't a night fighter attack. That was where we nearly crashed.
That's another thing, then.
Yes. That was when the circuit for Skellingthorpe almost overlapped the circuit for an adjoining airfield. And so if you imagine all going round, sooner or later, the circuits would be facing each other if one aircraft was a bit to one side. And I remember suddenly it was either the bomb aimer or the engineer shouting, "Christ, dive, Jack!" And there's an aircraft from the other, landing at the other airfield, coming head on. And Jack and Norman pushed the stick forward, floor dropped away, my oxygen bottles popped out of their holders, and my pencils and everything, Dalton computer, clattered to the floor. And again, that sick feeling as I watched the altimeter go round and round. And I didn't see anything, but the aircraft must have just gone overhead. The trailing aerial that you have stretched along was missing, so it must have caught it in his wheels, because of course we were both wheels down at this time. And we pulled out again at about 150 to 200 feet, and I think that was probably one of the closest I've got to being killed, in spite of all the operations against the enemy.
Now, when you got down, you found that was your final tour. And you thought you'd got one more to do, didn't you?
Yes. The we'd done 34. And so we weren't sort of all keyed up thinking this is our last trip. But when we got down, we were told that the pilot had done that second dicky trip before we flew. And so he'd done his 35. So because he'd completed his tour, we were all finished. So that was very good.
Was there any celebration? How did you feel in yourself?
I felt relieved. I felt I couldn't really imagine it. It wasn't a celebration as such, but the crew all came back to Notting with me, and we celebrated in the pub. And then we went our respective ways. And I only saw the wireless op again while we were still on in the Air Force.
I'll come back.
Yeah.
I'll come back. Now, you were awarded the DFC, weren't you? How did you feel about that? I mean, it's quite a distinguished, you know,
yes,
a thing to get.
Again, some weeks before the end of my tour, I'd been called into Waddington to see the group captain. And he said, I was a flight sergeant, and he said, you've been recommended for a commission. So I've been looking at your record, and I looked at all these things they say about you. Who am I to disagree with all these nice things they say about you? And he said, yes, I'm recommending you. But it didn't come through until I'd actually finished and was at Chipping Warden. And at the same time, he must have recommended my DFC, because when it came through, it was a DFC, not a DFM. And
so, although you, so that's a bit unusual, because although you served as a other rank, as a,
yes,
an NCO, you actually got the officer's award because you were in transit.
Yes. The papers must have gone through. The papers must have been in the works when this came up. And they said, well, this bloke's commissioned. Because of the commission was probably backdated, you know, to when the group captain stamped it. I don't know.
Did it? What did it mean, the DFC? I mean, a couple of you got it. I see Jack and Dave got it.
Yes. The officers and the crew got it.
Did it mean a lot?
It meant a lot in my afterlife. And I think it meant something when we were crewing up the second tour. And of course you got respect on the different training stations I was on in between the two.
But now, so what happened next then? You never saw Alf Higham or Norman Lum again?
No.
In fact, you didn't see much of any of them. And we've already discussed your rear gunner, David Gatt, was killed in the next mission.
On the very next mission.
We'd already talked about it.
Yes, yes.
So what happened next to you?
Well, I got posted to 12 OTU at Chipping Warden. That's what they call a screened navigator.
Now, what does that mean?
That means you fly with the crews and training and assess them and give them advice and mark their charts and things, and also give lectures. I gave lectures to and what we found that every new crew that came off ops said what the previous lot had been teaching was duff gen, because things were changing all the time as new tactics were being evolved. And so, but I didn't stay there very long.
You seem to have been there from August 44, just till September.
Yes.
You don't remember much about that tour then?
No. No, my logbook, I'd got only 1, 2, 3, 4, only 5 actual trips in. As cross-country trips with pupil navigators. And I'd only got 15 hours at 12 OTU. Because my DFC came through, I was suddenly called in and posted. I didn't even have a chance to have a party.
So where were you sent to next in September? It'd
be? Yes, the next thing was... Oh, wait a minute, I haven't got... Is it Banbury?
Now, who was that with? So what were you doing at Banbury?
It was either an AFU or an OTU. I can't remember now. But my job was course shepherd.
What does that mean?
That means when you get a course of navigators coming in, you look after them. They're the one that they turn to. You're the one that they bring their complaints to. In other words, you shepherd them around and look after them. But
how did you find that job?
A bit boring. And again, you see, I hadn't had any training as to be an officer. One minute I was an NCO, the next thing I was an officer, and didn't go on any in training course. I was even unsure whether you tipped your batman and that kind of thing. It's quite a new world to suddenly have my buttons cleaned and my boots polished and everything laid out and pressed for me, and to have my own room.
How did you feel about having an officer, a servant?
A bit awkward, because I'd never had one before. I suppose if in peacetime they go to somewhere like Cranwell or somewhere and they're taught all the things about what knife and fork to use and all the rest of it. I remember there was one moment. No, that came later.
What was the mess like at Banbury? Do you remember the officer's mess, or should we leave that to later?
No, it wasn't a permanent station, so everything was in Nissen huts and things. But they were a nice crowd, and I got on well with them. And you asked me earlier about the DFC. You go into any wearing the DFC, and again, they accept you quite readily. But I hadn't been there long. Then when I was told I was going to be posted to Transport Command.
Now, how did you feel about that?
Well, I thought, that's okay. I'd still be flying, which was rather nice. I was posted on the 2nd, or it was in September 45, to 13...
Hang on, that's a year later.
Is it?
We're just looking, and actually, from August 44 to September 44, you were at 29 OTU Bruntingthorpe, where you took an instructor's course, and then from September 44 you were at Chipping Warden, but it doesn't say when it finished. Do you know when that finished?
No, well, the last flying was on the... December 44. That's at Chipping Warden, 12 OTU. No, I was saying to somebody the other day.
So Banbury was possibly the outstation of Chipping Warden, was it?
I think so. But I was saying to somebody, I was looking at those notes about these courses I took, and I cannot remember anything about taking them. All I've got is a record of the marks I got. But there again, when you get to nearly 85, your memory gets very selective. It's almost like being in a dark room and shining a flashlight, and it illuminates just a section, and that's quite clear.
So you think you were at 12 OTU, Chipping Warden, and probably Banbury as well, from September 44 right through to September 45.
Yes.
Which would be, you were there when the war finished then.
Yes. Now, I remember that.
Now, tell me about that, because that makes sense now. We're back on track now.
I remember that because it was a terrific celebration. The bar opened.
Which one, VE or VJ or both?
This was the war in Europe.
VE.
VE Day, yes.
And what was it like?
Well, they opened the bar, first thing, and everybody started getting tanked up. I remember seeing a whole crowd of guys on motorbikes trying to ride over Nissen huts to get fast enough to go up one side and over the other. I don't think any of them managed it. But there was a general whoopee, and then, of course, I did my usual thing, got into my car and went to Nottingham and celebrated in the pub there with all the my mother and father and girlfriend. And
so a good day.
It was a very good day.
Anything else happened while you were at 12 OTU?
Not that I can remember.
Or Banbury, you know. It seems to be I think they are the same thing.
Yes.
Now, so what's you go to Transport Command in September. Now, this is another tour of duty, but where at and where are you going? What's happening?
Well, I was going to Transport Command, and in order to do that, you had to take their course. They wouldn't take Bomber Command navigators without doing the Transport Command course. And so I was posted to Cottesmore, which was a peacetime station, and quite something compared with any of the wartime camps I'd been in, because the officers' mess was a permanent building. We had afternoon tea at 4 o'clock, and we all went there in Marmite sandwiches. And but when the flying started, I was a bit disconcerted to find we didn't have parachutes on Transport Command, and I'd always felt the security of having a parachute behind me ready to strap on. But they said, well, of course, if you're carrying passengers, you can't very well say, well, I'm bailing out, guys, goodbye. So we never did.
And was the navigation any different, the techniques you were using?
There was a lot more technical stuff which we never used. For instance, we had to learn how to work out your star sights without the use of tables. You used Haversine formulae, which I can't remember a bit about now, and all that kind of thing. And there was a very technical exam which we all passed.
So you didn't have too much trouble with this difficult stuff at the time?
No. The thing was that the books that you used and which you could refer to in the exam had all handwritten cribs all along both covers, inside covers, all the formulae that you had to know and everything. Somebody had written it very kindly, and nobody ever checked them. They were given out to each course, and so when it came to the exam, we were helped and we all passed. And it was about this time I proposed to my girlfriend, and we arranged to get married.
So when did you get married?
27th of July 1945. But you couldn't get to the coast in those days because all the beaches and things were barbed wire entanglements. All the hotels were taken over for troops. So I booked at Matlock, which was near Nottingham. Really nice inland spa. And then I got news I was going to be posted to India. So I sent a telegram to Billy Butlin, saying, marrying on embarkation leave, require accommodation, Thursday to Thursday, can you help me? And signed it, Flight Lieutenant, no, Flying Officer then, Flying Officer, J. Taylor, DFC. And I got a telegram back saying, Mr. Butlin would be pleased to place his private accommodation, private chalet, at Filey at your disposal. And so after we got married on the Thursday, I stayed at my aunt's flat. She lent us a flat for the night. We travelled the next day to Filey. Now, it had been a Navy training establishment, and they'd just relinquished it. And Billy Butlin, who was the big king of holiday camps, had bought it up. And so it was only just opened. And we were all in these old chalets that the campers had. But when we got there, I was absolutely dumbfounded because these five chalets were at one side of the camp, a little apart, and it was covered with flowers. Great, standing in tubs, hanging from the rafters and things. Billy Butlin himself was there, and also the camp chef, with a big, tall, white hat and white coat. And all the press were there. And I thought, oh, God. When I get back to camp, I'll never hear the last of this. Because I could just imagine, you know, the headlines. RAF, Billy Butlin befriends RAF hero. But the next day was the results of the election came out, and it was the Labour landslide. Churchill was out, and of course there was nothing about me in the papers at all. In fact, about 6 months later, there was a little tiny picture when there was an article about Butlin's camps, just a picture of Joan and myself shaking hands with Billy Butlin. But I've got the picture upstairs that they took at the time. So that's something, again, that the DFC, I'm sure, did for me. At any rate, back to India.
Now, when were you posted out to India? That was September 45, was it?
Yes, it must have been. You see, I was at this transport conversion unit. That was training to go overseas.
That's transport conversion unit, Cottesmere, is it?
Yes. And they were a very good crowd there. All mad. They're all for second tour people. And we went down to a wedding while we were there, to London. Jimmy Lord was a pilot, and he invited me down to go with some of the other chaps. And it was the time of the flying bombs and the V-bombs. And while we're down there.
Now, I think our timing's going a bit wrong, because you said you went there after the war finished, so there'd be no V-bombs. I thought you were at the navigation course at transport from July 45 to September 45.
Yes, it must have been the previous place.
Yeah.
Yes, it must have been at Bruntingthorpe that we went down to there.
That would fit better.
Yes.
Bruntingthorpe's where you did your pre-instructor course. Now, what happened when you went to India then? So you went to India, is it September? And who are you posted to?
My logbook practically finishes there. I was going to... Oh, I know, yes. Here we are. 31st of December, 45. I flew to India in a Stirling as a passenger from Lynham to Castle Benito. And that was New Year's Eve.
So, again, there's a great gaping gap. I mean, you can't remember it. No. And as you say, you don't remember this period too well. So you go to India.
I remember the flight to India very well.
Tell us about that then.
Because we were in the Bombay of Stirling. They put canvas chairs all along, both sides facing each other. And the mixture of... We were all officers, but there were army officers and RAF officers. And Castel Benito, of course. We got to Castel Benito in North Africa. And it was New Year's Eve. And we were in a mixed transit mess. We were drinking out of bottles that had been cut down and smoothed round the edges instead of glasses. And everybody was getting higher and higher. And the last I can remember of that evening was standing up to get the double top, which would have won the darts match. And my pilot was gripping me by the jacket to hold me upright. Next thing I knew, I was lying flat on the bed. I'd got cherry brandy all down the front of my best blue. And I'd passed out, and they'd carried me back to my billet. And I was ill all the rest of the trip out to India, because the next stop was in Israel. And no, we went to Lida, that's right. Oh no, we stopped on the way because we lost an engine at Shaiba in Iraq, and we had to land at Shaiba. And we were 3 or 4 days there, and it felt like 3 or 4 weeks. Because it's right out in the desert. We were in huts that were half sunk into the sand with a blast wall built round them. And it was another Nissen hut mess. And nothing to do. We set off one day to walk to Basra. It didn't seem very far, but it was just marshes on each side and the track. We came to a village and had coffee there and decided to walk back again. We weren't going to make it. Now we landed in Israel. What's the Tel Aviv?
That would have been before, though.
Bun?
That would have been before. Unless you dug him back.
Yes, it must have been, mustn't it? Lida to Shaiba, Shaiba to Moripur.
Yeah, Moripur is in India.
Yeah. I tell you, your memory gets all...
Oh, don't worry about it. You do it fine. So what happened next? What else do you remember about the flight? I mean, don't worry if it's not in quite the right order. They can tell that Israel must have been first. So.
I remember at Tel Aviv, there was shooting going on because the Stern Gang, I think it was, or whatever it was, were doing all these raids and shooting. And so we didn't go into the town or anything.
What next?
And then landed in India. Oh, Karachi, I think. That's my first memory of India, is being in Karachi. And they'd got trams in those days. Because I remember being on top of a tram and it stopped because of a cow sitting on the tram lines and people were shouting at it, but they wouldn't touch it, they wouldn't move it because it was sacred to the Hindus. And I remember the officers' club there.